accession number 18580, real one.
Andy Allen, real one. Where were you born, please?
Aberdeen.
Which year was this?
2015, 1915.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Aberdeen?
Yes, I did.
What, can you tell me what kind of family you come from?
I come from a Fisher family.
How far does it go back?
Oh, into the dim past.
Did you become a fisherman yourself?
Yes.
At what age?
18.
So that must have been in
1933.
What kind of ships were you fishing in?
Well, I fished trawl and I fished line boats. In fact, I've gone through the whole system. Seam net, drift net, line, and trawl fishing.
And where did you normally go fishing?
All over the Northern Hemisphere. We used to line for halibut up and down the east and west side of Greenland.
How did you do it?
I'm sorry, I don't get that. How
did you do the line fishing for halibut?
The line fishing, well, the halibut will not accept herring because it's an alien fish to the where they are. So what you do is, we used to pick up about 10, 15 crana herring in Stornoway and then go out into the Arctic. And when you got there, you shot 130 lines, 130 hooks a line, and maybe you shot first time 6 lines with herring. The herring attracted the rougher top sort of fish, cod, tusk, ling, and then when you took them aboard that in the morning, you filleted them and put them into what they call dollops, like a haddock, like a filleted haddock. That was for the next night's fishing. Next night, you put 3 dollops and 1 herring on your lines, and you shot maybe 32 lines, which needed approximately 7 mile of a run. But the run we had been gathered together by the older men, and we knew exactly what sort of ground was underneath. Through their experience, not ours, through their experience over the years that they've been going up there.
You mean what the seabed was like?
What the seabed was like. But now and again, you snagged, your line, and your line broke. But when you were shooting your lines, you shot first a dan, you took your line from a dan.
What's and a dan?
A floating, a big cork float with a light on and a flag. And then you took halfway your lines and you shot another dan. And then from there, you completed your run. So you really had 3 dans and the set of the lines. You left them down all night, and in the morning, you started line hauling. You have a line hauler who's on the side of the ship, and that takes the line up from the sea. As you're going on, you may have broken a line. So you forget that, and then you go to the where you started shooting the previous day. You pick up your line there, and you're done, and then you start working back along the line. When you come to your second dan, which is a second from the start, you lifted your dan, you lifted your line, and then you started hauling that until you come to the break. Then you splice the break for the next night. Well, some halibut there were 12, 14, 16 stone in weight. When you're taking them aboard, you could see them coming up through the water, beautiful they were, you can see it now. you used to clip him in the head and clip him in the tail. Two men. And you used to wait till the ship went down on the halibut side, clip him, pull him up, and then the ship did the rest. The ship landed him on your deck.
What did you clip them with?
Boat hooks. Boat hooks. Well, you used to gut them there, and a line fisherman always kills the halibut first. Underneath the gill is the heart, and you used to put your gutting knife up and into the heart and kill them, let them bleed, for the sole purpose of you want a white-skinned halibut. And if the blood went down through the body again, he used to get a grey-skinned halibut. Well, you didn't want that. He just wanted the prime stuff for the market. So when you finished hauling that day, you put your fish down the fish room, and then you used to pack inside the gut, where you took the gut out, and up into the head and in the mouth with ice, with crushed ice. And then you lay them on the side at an angle, and you put them on the pond boards. Your pond boards like shelves in a big cabinet. You put them in there, and then you didn't put any fish on top of there. You didn't put any ice on top of there. You had just had the ice that they were lying on. You did that, and that was ready for the next night's fishing. Well, next day's hauling. It was a fishing, but it was a hauling. Am I making myself clear to you?
You are.
So, we used to be there 4 weeks, 4.5 weeks. And they used to, when you come back home again, when you made your passage back home, you had so many 6 stone, so many 8 stone, so many 10 stone halibut, 12 stone, 14. And when you went to the market, you used to lay them out in the market, biggest right down to the smallest, different lengths. And I've seen us land there 70 score of halibut. Make quite good money.
How were halibut regarded?
Oh, beautiful. Very, very high. Very high. See, it takes 7 years for a halibut to egg. That's to produce an egg. And they don't know where halibut actually shoot the egg, but they believe it's in the South Atlantic. So when the halibut live there with the best of food, curl and everything, and they're coming back, they come back like birds hibernating, come back to their actual place where they were brought up, where their mothers and fathers were brought up.
Does the sea bottom matter very much?
No, not to the halibut, no.
To the fishermen?
To the fishermen, yes. Over the, 60, 70, 80, maybe 90 years, the fishermen who were our forefathers kept this a record of everything here, where they had good work, where they had bad work. And there was no echo sounder then to take a depth, that they plumbed depth with the lead. And on the bottom of the lead, they used to put a wad of tallow. Push it over the side, drop it, hit bottom, then they used to take the lead up and used to examine the tallow in the bottom. And if it was a good bottom, it was put down in the records.
What would a good bottom be?
Sand and they got. If they got heavy work where the lines, they got a lot of lines broken, that was washed out. So you only had certain parts of the ocean where you fished for halibut.
What kind of bottom would break the lines?
Big rocks. Volcanic rocks, anything like that. Once the line got snagged, and you started heaving, it hit the brake. You couldn't take the rock up. Therefore, the line broke.
And where do the fishermen fish for halibut? Just the west coast of Greenland?
Off St Kilda. In fact, there was a bank there, a halibut bank there. The halibut always seem to feed in banks. That's where they get feeding. And there was a bank there, and halibut lice got into the halibut there. And I've seen a 6-ton halibut that weighed about 22 pounds in weight. Because the lice had got worked up into the size of the fins and eaten the flesh completely of the halibut.
What do the lice look like?
Just like a small beetle. Like a small beetle.
And where did you do the seine fishing?
The seine fishing? I did it in the North Sea.
For what kind of fish?
Oh, anything. Anything that was going. I was seen that you same again, you drop it down, you drop your leaders, your leader ropes, away from the down, and then you drop your net. And when you have the net out, it's like a bag. So you take the leaders off the end of the bag, up again to your ship, and you pull them tight. And all the time, you're net there is fishing over the grounds. And then when your net comes close, you belt that winder on. And you draw it up. You just let it go then.
What was the main catch in the North Sea then?
Haddock, lemon soles, plaice, cats.
Cats?
Catfish. Beautiful. Beautiful tasted fish. That's my wife.
But not cod.
Oh yes, cod as well, yes. But the main line for cod was Faroe, Norwegian coast, Portland Low Shore at Iceland.
Which shore?
Portland Low Shore. Where the Snowy Joker is, that's the volcano. It comes down there and then it goes onto a sort of shelf. Underwater shelf, and they come in there to breed, to lay their eggs in their melt. And there at that certain time of the year. Well, we left Aberdeen once with a ship, and we went down to Iceland, which was 92 hours, because you take your time going down to save your coal for coming back. Because when you're coming back, you're going as fast as you can, as fast as you're allowed to, well, as the boat will allow you to go. And then when you come back there, you're belting. But we left once, I forget what ship it was, and in 11 days, we came back to Aberdeen with the fish, the ship, full to the hatches. Cod. Cod's very prolific off Iceland. Very, very prolific.
And what about the drift net fishing?
Oh, the drift net? Well, when you're drift net fishing, you go where you think the fish will be, where you think the fish will be. And you put out maybe 30 nets. That's not right down, on the surface, with corks and weights at the bottom. And then when the herring comes to the net, tries to get through the net, can't get through the net, and he's sort of guided, the shape of the net in the water, guides them into a bag. Now when you drift net, you shoot your nets, whatever, how many you want, and then the rest of the crew turn in. And 9 out of 10, the engineer has a steamer, and he keeps going up and down and looks at the bag, how much herring's in it. And if he thinks there's going to be a run of herring, he wakens the crew, then they start hauling the net. Because herring, once they take it in their head to go down, they'll take net and everything. Once they make up their mind, because they're heavy fish, and they just go down. They rip things to pieces. Because the harder you're pulling and yanking and trying to get the board, and that's how you drift net. And some of they use it a cran. They use herring and measure the cran. 4 boxes to the cran. And there's about 100 weight in each box. So every cran's 400 weight. When they land them, right, there used to be a night's work for drift nets, maybe 200 cran, which was a lot of herring, a lot of herring. But they used to shoot in the late afternoon, and then the engineer or whoever was on the deck looked up and started, told them when to haul, waking the crew and get them hauling.
So where would you do the drift netting for fishing?
North Sea.
For herring?
North Sea, around the coast of Britain. That's, at one time, my people, the females, followed the fishing. They left from Aberdeen to Northumberland. Northumberland to Yarmouth. Yarmouth, Isle of Wight. Right around the coast and up the west side, and then come back to Aberdeen, and then they had the break then. But that was my father's people there, my sisters. They followed the fishing faithfully every year.
And how did the trawlmen from Aberdeen, Hull, Grimsby, Fleetwood, Peterhead and so on get on with each other?
It was a friendly rivalry. It was a friendly rivalry, because we're all doing the same work, and we're all standing the same risk. See, that's what a lot of people, unless you've actually done this job, you can't realise what it is that binds you. If there's any ship from anywhere in the world, and I mean in the world, was in trouble, you can bet your life there was trawlermen there to help them, if they could.
What were the main risks in your day?
Getting washed over. I was washed over, and my brother was in the water for 17 minutes in the North Sea. You're not supposed to be compass after 6 or 7 minutes, but David was 16, 17 minutes in the North Sea when he didn't see net. My dad was over twice. You see, the thing is, when you're hauling your net, you've got quite a lot of fish in the bag at the end of the net. So you've got that. When you get a surge of water and it lifts the boat, which it'll do first because that's a resistance, it'll lift the boat first, but it doesn't lift the net. The fish are still there, dead weight. So you're actually taking over now and again. I was somersaulted. I was taken over once, somersaulted. And I kept my hands in the net. And they're shouting to me, "Andy, let go of your hands. We'll get you back." You see, they had a hold of me. And he says, "Let go of your hands, let go of your hands." Andy wouldn't let go of his hands. They had to cut the net around with my hands to get me back on board. And that's true. The old man said, "You damn fool, why didn't you let go of that net?"
But you were telling me about a time when a couple of hull trawlers were lost through being overburdened with ice.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what happened?
Well, the weather turned very bad. Very, very bad. And I heard the ice. See, you can hear ice 20 or 30 miles away. When it's coming down and starts climbing on top of one another, you can hear the ice. And another thing is, you can smell the ice in your body. Because if you are down in a ship, inside, and you come on deck, well, just imagine you coming out a house, a hot house, in a frosty morning, and your lungs go, and you feel it, do you? Well, just imagine that maybe 10 times as bad as that, with ice coming down. You can feel the ice, and that's how you know when there's ice about. You know when there's ice about. Even if you can't hear it. Whenever you say, that's cold. And that's ice. Simple. It's just a trial and error. It's just a case of trial and error. You're there to do the job, and you're being guided by older men who have been through it all before. And if you don't learn off the older men, well, you're just a fool. Because that's your life there. Well, that year when the two hullmen got lost, we were fishing there, and the weather turned very, very bad. And as I was saying, salt water running across the deck was freezing as it ran. You could see a coating coming over the top as it ran. It was ice. You know, these two hullmen, they had been well in where they were, and our skipper says, all right, pull ends aboard, and we lay there, but the Aberdeen ships have got a mizzen mast and a mizzen sail, and when the weather pushes on a sail, you lie broadside onto the weather, and when it pushes a sail, you just get rocked up and down and pushed away like that, all the way. But that poor chap is in there. They had no mizzen sail. And they just had to, what you call, keep punching into the wind. But the more they punched into the wind, the further they went in and the colder it got. And they were on the phone to one another for a start. And then it was a general thing that we were listening. Everybody in that area was listening to what they were saying. We had to find out. After all, no matter which one they come from Hull, they were 1 hour. He was a fisherman. Which to us meant a great deal. And then this chap is, the skipper must have been on the phone all the time. And we heard him saying, we're building up a terrific head ice on the riggings. They tried hard to get it off. They didn't manage. And these two ships were lost. They turned turtle.
How would you normally get the ice off?
Well, if you can get across the deck, you got an axe or something like that and slapped it up and broke it off. The next lot of water would wash so much away down the scuppers. Some of them use steam. Some of them use steam pipes. But it was only a temporary abatement of the ice. Because there's water coming aboard all the time.
Where were the ships lost?
Oh, well up into the Antarctic.
Arctic or Antarctic?
Arctic. I forget the names of the ships now. But I've seen strong men crying aboard our ship. I was crying. But, I mean, older men, you don't expect older men have been to sea all their life. That affect them. And I've seen older men crying, standing crying. It wasn't so much them losing their life. It was because we couldn't get into them. We wanted in there with them. But couldn't get into them.
What did the Aberdeen fishermen call Hull fishermen?
Yorkies.
What did they call Grimsby fishermen?
Yellowbellies.
What did they call Fleetwood fishermen?
Fleetwood, I can't remember the Fleetwood fishermen, although I had an uncle with a skipper out of Fleetwood. But
Or Peterhead and Fraserburgh?
Peterhead, Blue Mogganos.
Blue what?
Blue Mogganos, because Peterhead is it's an obsession with blue paint. And they used to paint their doors blue and everything like that. Blue Mogganos.
What does Morgana mean?
Well, it's a term of endearment. A Blue Morgana.
And Fraserburgh?
They're brokers.
Why?
Well, Fraserburgh was on the corner. Peterhead's here. The Fraserburgh's up in the Kinnaird Head. And they call them brokers because that was an option. I couldn't say, I wouldn't know because, let's say, I wasn't old enough when that name was first mentioned.
What were Icelanders called?
Many things.
For example?
No, if at any time we had men hurt at sea and were to take them into Iceland and leave them there in hospital, we used to sign on two or three. If there was three men off, we signed on three Icelanders. We signed them on to cover them for insurance. And my father and my mother, it was Icelanders aboard ship. Instead of leaving them aboard ship, she always used to take them up the house and keep them with us, with the lads. We were our lads. Well, they were just young lads as well. We're all lads together. And then when we went back to Iceland again, went down and picked up our own three crew members and we put them ashore. But they got the wages and the bonuses for that trip.
So what nicknames did they have?
Oh, no, just...
What nicknames did Icelanders generally have?
I've heard a few nicknames. Blondie. Had quite a few nicknames. They're out of my head now. Out of my head.
What nicknames did Norwegians have?
Norwegians? Oh, well. We've always called them Norwegians.
Did you ever go up to Bear Island?
Yes.
What for? Cod?
Yes.
Was it much different there from anywhere else?
Well, Bear Island, that was my first trip to sea, Bear Island. I've got it in that reminiscence. But that was my first trip to sea, and the skipper was, I forget his name now, I'm sorry. Sorry, my memory's a wee bit funny. And he said to me, he said that it was two young lads, two apprentices, and there was two young lads there, and he says, I'm going to show you something you might never see in a lifetime again. He said, I'm going to take you in as close as I can to Bear Island. South facing Bear Island, when he took us on the boat, the vegetation was, the flowers and everything was beautiful. Yet when he took us on the north side, it was ice. Just like a division across the island.
How was the money paid to trawlermen from Aberdeen?
Well, when I went to sea first, as a fisherman, I was on 6 and 9 a day. That's 34 pence a day. Out of that, I had to pay my food, my gutting knife, and my oilskins and boots. If you had a good tip, you may pick up a bonus, making it maybe up to 10 shillings a day. Maybe. The livers that you saved, you boiled with steam, and you kept that as oil. And you got a share of that. Everybody got a share of that. The only snag was the boat got a share as well, the owner. He got a big share. We used to create the devil about it, you know. You say, why? He wouldn't see. He wouldn't see. What's he getting a share for? But they got a share.
And how was your bonus determined?